Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Making stuff is hard, especially in the entertainment world, where big egos, bigger budgets, and just plain bad luck can make things go horribly wrong. And we're going behind the scenes of these disastrous, never-ending, and often dangerous productions to find out why it was a shit show.
Hello, friends. My name is Ian. This is It Was a Shit Show. I am joined by Clint.
Hello.
And Ray.
Bonjour.
And returning animated champ, Ryan.
Hey, what a title.
To be clear, he's here in the flesh. He's not animated.
Yes.
That'd be wild.
Yeah, audio only animated character.
On this purely audio medium.
Yeah. I can confirm he is a real person sitting here.
He's touching my leg right now.
Silky.
He's doing his own mocap at the moment, actually, as we learned. He was a mocap artist in a future life.
Yeah.
That will come up. so remember that. With Ryan here, we got to talk animation, of course.
Always.
I've had like a few movies on our list to cover, but one felt particularly appropriate for the time, because this last Thanksgiving, Ray and I decided to ditch our families and head to Paris.
This is a great decision. I highly recommend ditching your family at Thanksgiving.
Clint, with your kids, yes?
Yeah,
just leave them to fend for themselves.
Yeah.
Just get put at the frozen turkey, like they can figure it out.
They'll figure it out.
For sure.
Yeah, it's in the sink, you know, it's thawing.
To be clear, Paris, France, not like...
Paris, Texas.
Paris, Texas.
Yeah. Paris, California.
Well, one night there, keeping with the theme of our vacation, we decided to watch Ratatouille in our hotel room.
A nice French film.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So today, let's talk rats in the kitchen.
Ew.
I think the most important idea I had ended up being to make the hat sort of transparent. They had always had Remy peeking out of the hat in order to see what was going on and stuff like that. And that was a tremendously cumbersome thing to do for the character, because it always made you wonder if the rat was going to be seen, and it was taking your attention off what you needed to be paying attention to, which is what Remy was paying attention to. So that one simple idea was a very liberating one, and that made its first appearance in this scene.
Clint,
What
you got for your closet?
This is actually really kind of serendipitous, because I was trying to think of like, what could I bring? I'm actually wearing my Pixar shirt right now. It's the
Luxo with the apple.
Cool.
Rainbow colors.
I didn't think about that until literally like 5 minutes as I was walking out the door, and I was like, oh, what am I going to bring? Now I did bring something else too, but I was like, oh, this is perfect. I'm wearing this. But because Ian Holm is in Ratatouille, I decided to bring my one ring. See, because, you know, he was Bilbo.
Of all the things you have, yeah. You go to a different movie.
Completely.
You don't even stay in Pixar lane.
No, like, I was like, well, who do I have? I don't have anything Patton Oswalt. And I'm trying to think of it. I'm trying to think of, like, other people in the film. I was like, well, I'm not really. I mean, Brad Garrett's a great voice actor, but I hate everything. Everybody Loves Raymond. That movie, that show sucks. Don't tell my mom. And I was like, well, I've got.
But your kids don't have like a little Remy or.
No. Like, I like Ratatouille a lot. And I think this is probably maybe only like the third time in my life that I've seen it, even though I really like this movie. But yeah, I was like, well, Ian Holm was Bilbo. I got the one ring, so I'm going to bring my one ring.
He looked at the ring, thought, why shouldn't I bring it?
Why shouldn't I?
And if I put it on, then I go invisible. Ian's dream come true.
I think it.
No, that's called editing the podcast. Yeah. Yeah.
And cut. No, I think that says a lot about the popularity of this movie, based on the fact that you don't have any toys in the closet or anything to bring.
Yeah, that is kind of bizarre.
When I went to Disney World like a year and a half ago, they did have the what are the things they wear? It was called the chef's hat, the toque or whatever it's called, with like a Remy inside of it.
Your clan hood? What? No,
just doing that motion, yeah. But the eye is already cut out for me. No.
Yeah, the tall chef's hat.
Yeah, the tall chef's hat. Yeah, not a clan hood, you ass. No, a chef's hat with little Remy inside. And I was like, oh, that's cute. But I just like, I didn't get it.
All right. Okay, we're going to jump back to 1995. Pixar released the first all-computer animated film, Toy Story. And then, so Pixar's co-founder, Ed Catmull decides that the company shouldn't lose touch with their roots and wants to revive their shorts program. And so in comes animator Jan Pinkava. He joined Pixar in 93 and was in their commercial division. He directed a lot of the ads, and it's kind of weird to think of Pixar as doing ads, but you remember the Listerine ads? Where the dance, like there was a bottle of Listerine that random shit. Like there's one that dances, and there's one, the one he did that he got like an award for was like, it's doing archery. So Catmull asked Pinkava to make the first Pixar short in 8 years, but it needs to have a human character. So the first short they did in 8 years, which is crazy to me, is Jerry's Game.
Right.
You guys remember that one?
Yeah. Where he's playing chess with himself.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's right. The old guy, right?
Uh-huh. The old man who's playing chess with himself. And then he also shows up in Toy Story 2 as the guy that restores Woody.
I'm sorry.
I would like to restore my Woody. Okay. So when Pinkava was making this, he says the original idea was terrible because he focused on all the wrong details. Because he was like, and we're going to show the backgrounds, and we're going to show how the cloth moves. And he's like, you're pitching a tech demo, not a short. Hmm. And so, yeah, it's basically not a short. And then so he refocuses and then gets it right with the help of obviously all the Pixar people. The short wins 1998's Best Animated Short. Then at the Oscars, then it was in front of Bug's Life, which I think is funny because for probably almost all of us, we saw it in front of a Bug's Life.
Right.
Mm. Right.
But it had been around for a year at that point.
But like, unless you stuck those in front of a movie, like where the hell were you supposed to see
exactly,
those?
Right,
like, like back then, like what was even the internet? Like nobody knew where to find stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So after he works on A Bug's Life, Monsters, Inc. and Toy Story 3, Pinkava is asked by John Lasseter to pitch a feature-length film. Pinkava comes up with an idea and he's working on it on and off for about a year. And then Pixar says, No, we don't want that. Try again.
What was the idea?
He didn't say. He doesn't say. He just said he was just working on something that he eventually wants to do.
But a whole year.
A whole year, yeah. Wouldn't you like that? Just to...
Hard work. Lots of like yourself put into this project, I'm sure.
Yeah. But then they go, okay, try again. Pitch something else.
Okay.
And then he goes, okay, I got three new ideas. And he comes back and he pitches it to the Brain Trust, which is John Lasseter and Andrew Stanton. I think Joe
Pete Rand. Doctor, right?
Pete Doctor, I think, was a little bit later. Mm. But yeah, so basically the guys, they're just all there just to help to make sure that Pixar movies are good, right? Mm. So they love his third idea, which is about a rat who wants to be a chef. And they love this because it's like a rat in a kitchen is death both ways. Because if you find a rat in the kitchen, the staff is going to kill that rat.
Right.
And secondly, if a rat is found in a kitchen, it's going to be the death of that restaurant.
The restaurant, yeah.
I'll bet John Lasseter was like, that'll be great. We'll call it Rats.
Aw, rats.
Aw, rats.
Aw, rats. Rats.
Pinkava writes the first script with Jim Capobianco throughout 2002. And then Pixar decides that Project 2006 will be their eighth film. But internally, it was always titled Ratatouille.
Hmm.
Okay, Clint, you're going to be our Jan Pinkava.
Jan Pinkava, okay.
And this is why they decided to call it Ratatouille.
Ratatouille was always the title from the very beginning. It seemed like an inescapable choice. It's about a rat. It's about food. It's French. What other word has all those things in it and sounds so melodic and silly? The idea of having ratatouille be a key dish at the story's climax seemed equally natural.
Makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
End of podcast.
Yeah. And we're good.
The thing that bugs me about it is that like people still don't really seem to realize that the rat's name is Remy and not Ratatouille.
Yeah, I know.
Like, oh.
It's like,
oh,
my favorite character in Ratatouille is Ratatouille. Talk about the dish? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the little kid logic. It's like her niece loves Tangled.
Yeah.
Princess Tangled.
She'd call her Princess Tangled.
No.
It's like, it's Rapunzel.
Yeah. So Pinkava continues to rewrite with Emily Cook and Kathy Greenberg. In it, Remy the Rat dreams of being a cook and befriends a garbage boy, Alfredo Linguini, at the prestigious restaurant Gusteau's. Remy soon discovers that he can control Linguini by tugging on his hair. Sounds like the movie we all watched, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
The whole premise of that is just like, I love the idea that Linguini is just so empty-headed that like his hair somehow like tugs on like nerves of his body.
Yeah.
Like he's just like, he's so zen and just like zones out.
He's zen.
Yeah, this is really a movie about zen.
Yeah. You know? We'll get to that. Okay. After 3 years in development, Lasseter thinks the leadership and the vision in the story were not there. This is Pinkava.
By the summer of 2004, it had already been a long haul and I needed help.
So he admits that he's having problems with this movie. Mm.
That's so funny because everything that you said that you pitched, that was been pitched already, like that is the movie.
That's the movie. Hmm.
Yes.
But it needs like
something's
wrong. Okay. I'm wondering what, please, continue.
So this is turning into just like how we on Jerry's Game where he was focusing on the wrong things.
Okay. Are you telling me this movie was some kind of shit show?
That's the end of the podcast. Okay, so in October, they bring in Bob Peterson to help as co-director.
There's so many Petersons.
Not Peterson, Bob Peterson.
This is the other one.
Yeah,
this is the guy that we talked about in the Good Dinosaur
Look,
episode.
I get them straight.
Yeah.
I got them. Okay.
There
I got
was
it
Peterson
all
and Bob Peterson. So this is before Good Dinosaur. So he gets brought in to be co-director and is told to get the story in a good place. And Pinkava is completely off the story and only on designs. Like he's no longer allowed to be doing any of the screenplay. In June of 2005, Peterson presents his vision to the Brain Trust and Lasseter calls it a failure.
Oh,
so I find this very fascinating because we talked about Good Dinosaur. That's later that. This is the multiple times where Peterson's like, I got it. I got it. No, you don't got it.
No, you don't got
get
it.
Back, get back.
Get voice some random. Here.
Go back to voicing Doug.
Yeah.
So both Peterson and Pinkava are taken off the film.
But this is Pinkava's whole idea.
Yes.
Like everything that you've already said that Pinkava pitched, there's Alfredo Linguini, there's the rat that wants to be a chef, there's French. the it's title.
Like a lot of hair pulling.
Cousteau is all in there. Hair pulling. That sounds hair pulling in there. All of that was Pinkava. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, we love this. We don't love what else you're doing with the story. Focus on design. But now you're telling me like, okay, Pinkava, thank you for everything you've given us. Now kindly fuck off.
Pretty much.
Okay.
That's sad.
Pixar's brutal.
But not like from Pixar. Like he still worked there, right?
Peterson goes on to work on Up. Pinkava leaves Pixar.
They broke his heart.
Yeah.
Kicking him off his two passion projects.
Yeah. So he's gone. But Pixar hasn't invested, like they've invested a lot of time and money into this project and they need it to work. So backing up a little bit, at this point in time, very broadly, Pixar is fighting with Disney's CEO, Michael Eisner. So at this point, like Disney only distributes Pixar films and Pixar just makes them. And there's no connection, like they don't get a say in what the direction of those films go. And they share profits 50-50. But Disney is trying to strong arm their deal where Disney would make more, even though they don't even produce these. Mm. They just want more money.
Why do I love Disney so much? I hear things like this, I'm like, why do I love them?
So Eisner sees an early cut of Finding Nemo. And he determines Disney does not need Pixar. Like, and he tells his shareholders this, like, guys, don't worry about it. Pixar's doing their own thing. It's not that big of a deal. But shortly after, Nemo becomes the highest grossing animated film in history and the 12th highest grossing film of all time.
Yeah. I love that when, like, you hear stories where, like, guys, don't worry about this. I know. I've been in the biz. I know. And all of a sudden it just comes to bite them back in the ass and like, oh, shit. No.
Yeah, exactly, right? So Steve Jobs, who owns Pixar at that point, he basically counters a deal to Disney that is he deliberately made a deal just to piss off Eisner. Like, nobody funny. Knows That's what's great. Actually in it, but it could have been like 95.5 or some bullshit just to be just like, fuck you.
I'll
like,
throw we in just a brand new iPhone, too. Because this would have been 2007, right?
Yeah,
on the iPhone.
This is 2004. This is about okay. There. So anyway, Steve Jobs deliberately tries to just fuck with him. And
sounds like old Steve.
Yeah, exactly.
Steve's giving him the old job.
Giving him the old job.
Yeah, I got a Steve job.
For the longest time, I said that and forgot it was my last name.
I did it to so many people.
Just became a verb more than my name.
No, he changed it to job because he was always giving people the job. It was just like Jensen before that.
Giving him the Jensen didn't work.
That is too sexual. It sounded way too sexual. Yeah.
But job didn't.
Slightly less so. You still want the threat of like,
yeah,
like
getting jobbed.
Maybe it's a little sexual.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to get job.
In 2004, Disney and Pixar announced their distribution deal would come to an end after Cars.
I remember that. So it was making all big news.
Yeah, making Ratatouille their first independent film.
Whoa.
So, of course, they could have found someone else to distribute their things because Finding Nemo was so huge. Like, that would not be a problem.
Right.
But now they're independent, so they need this movie to fucking work.
Yeah.
And they put all this time and money into it. They can't just bury it.
Right.
Yeah, they're not Warner Brothers.
Yeah, exactly. No write-off there.
Sick burn. Some Warner Brothers exec is listening to this and he's like, oh.
Okay. In July of 2005, Brad Bird, who wrote and directed The Incredibles in 2004, which Ryan just told me, which is one of the reasons he wanted to get into animation, right?
Yeah, I was a big fan of that movie when it came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was a big deal because he was the first person to come in from outside of Pixar. Everybody in Pixar was making all the movies together. And then they were like, when they were working on the next one, they were like, we'll bring in someone new. And Brad Bird already had a huge reputation from The Simpsons, which we talked about, and Iron Giant. And so he comes in and he was already just like, because Incredibles was so good, he instantly becomes part of Pixar's brain trust. Like, because they're just like, this guy fucking gets it.
Yeah.
So.
This guy's incredible.
Yeah.
He's incredible.
He wears colorful shirts. He's in.
So he's got Lassiter's approval. Yeah.
He's got loud shirts and even louder ideas.
He's in.
Is that how you spoon Lassiter?
Pixar, loud shirts, loud.
Louder ideas.
Louder ideas.
So Brad Bird is on vacation and he gets a call from Steve Jobs, then John Lasseter, then Ed Catmull.
He's like, I got a job for you.
Oh, shit.
Oh, it's Jobs.
Oh, God.
I'm getting a job. I'm getting job. Good job or bad job?
They ask him to leave his vacation early and take over Ratatouille.
Oh, this was Brad Bird?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Bird, again, he was part of the Brain Trust, and so he knew all about all the troubles that Ratatouille was having because he was there. He was in every one of those updates. He was kind of sitting there giving his feedback. So he knew, like, where this was going.
He was probably like, God, I'm glad that's not my project.
Yeah.
And then, fuck!
Oh, yeah, they're spending too much time on how the fur looks.
Lasseter knew they could put Bird on the film and get, like, minimal notes, and, like, he could carry it home. This is, Jenny Ray, you're going to be our Brad Bird.
Oh.
This is...
Where's your loud shirt?
Yeah, sorry, my shirt's pretty quiet right now. It's just gray. boring.
Yeah, you're okay.
I was not prepared.
You're good.
This is Brad Bird on how he felt taking over.
I really hated the idea of taking over somebody else's dream project because I have a lot of respect for Jan and I think he's very talented. It was a rough position to be in because I always come down on the side of the creator. I want people who come up with the idea to be the ones who usher it all the way through.
Classic.
Like animator bro code.
What's in the animator bro code, Ryan? What else is...
Well, that's the first one.
And a lot of jobs.
Yeah, a lot of jobs.
A lot of jobs. We're bros.
Hey, he dated that project first, you know. I can't just jump on that, yeah. Like, once he's been booted out.
Brad Bird continues.
It wasn't like Jan ever had a version that he was happy with. He didn't, and he was constantly trying to find it. Look, movies are hard. They're technological, but it's not an exact science. And sometimes it doesn't work out. Rather than shut the movie down, Pixar did what they needed to make it happen.
So, why did he take over? Why did Bird, even though he felt bad for Jan, Pinkava, why did he take over?
You need to do whatever you can to help out, because this little Camelot they've made is a very rare place. They were in a spot, and I felt I could help. And I liked the idea. I thought, this deserves to be on theater screens.
Yeah, I feel like that would be kind of a really weird place to put yourself into. Just be like, this guy's like, yeah, fuck yeah, my first Pixar film. And then it's like, good job, good job. Yeah, scratch him behind the ear, send him out.
Give him a treat.
Although, to his point, though, it would have been worse if they were just like, they just scrapped it completely. And then his idea and his vision never...
None of it ever made it.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. At least, like, they got someone else in to finish it. They finished it. It was out there. I'm assuming Jan was credited on it for, like, a story credit or something. Yes. Yeah, so... Yes. You know, like, he was still part of it. It happened.
Yeah.
I think burying it, you know, Warner Brothers style would have been worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Lasseter's Cars was taking a bit longer than expected.
Oh, he loves the Cars, doesn't he? It's fine, Lasseter. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's a great land, California adventure, but, like, that's fine.
That was
That's what came
goal.
Out of it.
That's the ultimate goal.
I mean, he was like, look, I got to make, like, 4 of these movies and make a huge toy franchise, and then I can finally do what I really wanted to do, which was...
A land and a theme
a land,
park.
A theme park, yeah.
I mean, he was in charge of that, too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
The engineering guy over there?
Yeah, he was, like, the lead, like, design over it.
Yeah.
So Cars is delayed from holiday 2005 to summer 2006. This allowed Ratatouille to be pushed back as well to give them time to get to turn it around with a June 2007 release date. Again, they need to get this movie out right now or they're going to have problems.
Mm-hmm.
So this gives Brad Bird and Pixar how much time to finish the film?
6 months.
7 Jesus. Months.
4 months.
It's Price is Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Think about how much it takes to make a fucking movie.
Okay.
Like what, 3 or 4 years?
Oh, animated movie. Usually a Pixar movie will, like, no problems, animated movie, 3 years, maybe.
Okay.
I know, but this is called It Was a Shit Show. So I assumed there was there's going to be some shit show.
I know, but there's still, it's easier to go and reshoot a bunch of shit versus animating
okay.
a bunch of shit.
Okay.
A decade. I don't know. Fuck.
1 year.
Yeah, I have no answer.
18 months to finish the film. Bird is not starting from scratch. They had the character models and the sets. So he needs to make it work within that framework.
Don't you dare leave this set in your story.
By and large, all they need to do is settle on the story and then animate it.
That's
an animator from your perspective. It's still a fuck ton of work. and if you see the movie, how much fucking animation is actually in it?
Oh, like, yeah. Yeah.
Like Linguini alone.
And his like ragdoll limbs.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The Ratatouille ride's really fun.
Clint, back here. Oh, back in the podcast, Clint.
All right, here we go. All right. Whoa, where'd I come from? What's going on?
Just Imagineering over there?
Yeah.
He went into his Imagineering happy place.
What kind of shirt were you wearing?
I was wearing this shirt.
Oh, yeah.
And no pants.
No pants. Best dream ever.
So when Bird jumps in, he needs to make some radical changes.
Some radical changes. Oh, yeah. We're so good at this podcast.
First and foremost, he realizes that Pinkava was trying to tell too many stories. So we talked about, it sounds like it's the same damn film, right?
Right.
What are the differences? So this is the story beats that Pinkava in his version includes: Remy falling into the kitchen, fixing the soup, getting caught, puppeteering Linguini, they're falling out, the rat family's heist of the food, mm-hmm. Remy's reveal to the rest of the cooks walking out, and the ending with the kitchen run by rats.
Yeah.
Same movie, right?
Yeah.
But what I fucking love about this movie is that what you're talking about, the pulling of the hair.
Yeah.
Right? So this is Brad Bird about making that work.
I think you can buy this very hard to believe idea if you lead people along step by step. That's why it's hard for me to sum up the story, because it sounds preposterous when I start telling it. But we really are excited about making the unbelievable believable and buyable. And I think we all recognize that the idea was wonderfully absurd and right for animation.
Hmm. So one of the things I found very fascinating is I was listening to the Expanse podcast, and Ty Frank, who's a writer, was talking about how mostly in sci-fi, that you get one ask from the audience. If they just go, why? Like, why is this? Like, you get to do that one leap of logic.
Mm-hmm.
They'll go with you with that one leap of logic. But once you do it a second time, you're pushing it. And when you do it a third time, they're just like, I don't fucking give a shit. It's, I'm done.
Like, they're going to start questioning. Wait a minute.
Yeah, it's just illogical and it sounds stupid. Ratatouille has a lot of fucking asks.
Totally. That was what I was coming with in my head today to the podcast. I remember when I watched it, I didn't understand why does this feel like they missed it so bad when it's like I've always loved Pixar movies.
Uh-huh.
And then when I first saw this one, I was just like, this is the first one where it's like, even in an unbelievable situation, it's unbelievable.
Oh, you never got there? You never were like okay with it?
No. This is my least favorite Pixar movie.
Wow. Yeah.
Really? Even though it's the only one that I actually get teary-eyed at the climax. I think it's because I'm a mama's boy, though. When Ego transports back and sees his mom, I'm like, fuck, mom.
I thought you were just going to say you just really like food.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that looks so good.
Fat joke?
Well, that's funny that you say that, because there's only one thing about this movie, because like, I'm along for it, right? Like the whole hair pulling, I watch anime. There's like little dudes in robot suits controlling. I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, this is a mech movie.
Yeah, it's a mech movie. But there's this one part that I'm always like, why did this happen? And it's when Linguini is first to the restaurant. He's like mopping up and he sees the soup and he's like, I'm going to start doing shit to it. Like,
oh, yeah.
Why? Why?
So unbelievable. Why? What?
Especially since he, at that point in the movie, he does not know that he's Gusteau's son. And his mom just like sent him there, like for what? Like, I think just like because she wanted, like, you know, to have the meat or whatever. Or I don't, that's whole confusing too. Like,
They don't set up that he wants to cook.
They don't set up that. Yeah, they
start throwing stuff.
They don't set up that he wants to cook, and all of a sudden he's like,
"No, no, I think he just needed a job, and she was calling in a favor because she knew he was his son."
Okay, there you go. Okay, that makes
it was. She didn't have any, I don't think, preconceptions about like that he was going to be a chef or like suddenly really good at being a cook.
Okay,
and he's just trying to make up for a mistake.
Yeah,
because he just fucked up and he doesn't want to get fired,
and he like bumped it and like sloshed a bunch of the soup out, so he was just like, "Oh fuck, fuck, fuck! I don't want to get fired."
I missed that. I've seen this movie.
That's why.
Yeah, I missed that detail as well.
Jeez,
I watched
come
it this morning.
Okay. All right. Now it all makes sense. Best movie ever. Right? Yeah.
But even then,
pull his hair. I don't give a shit.
but even then, so you have the there's a rat that wants to cook.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. And then you have a rat that ends up in a kitchen.
Well,
okay.
First off, right. He understands English and can read a fucking book.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, if we stop there, that is pretty cool. Yeah. Don't add anything else to this.
So then you have the fact that he is a really good cook, and then he finds the guy that finds him. He's suddenly just like, you understand me? Like we're speaking to each other. Like we understand each other. And it's like, okay, there's another big ask.
Yep.
And then he's like, we're going to cook together. Another big ask. And then it's just like, fuck it. Pull his hair. And that's how you control him. Like that is so many asks. And I think it just gets so crazy that I'm along for it. Like, I don't.
At this point, there are so many asks. They're just like, fuck coming, yeah.
Let's go.
You just have to be like Linguini and just turn your brain off and just be like, I'm watching this movie.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you forgot the very first ask, which is when they're like living at that farmhouse. They somehow, through going through the sewers, like make it to Paris.
Yeah.
When they're like escaping from the farm.
I've been in Paris this whole time? Okay. So that all sounds like the same movie, right? So what is Pinkava's? In his, Gusteau is alive and he's dealing with his slimy sous chef, Skinner, who convinced Gusteau to sell his name for frozen food. So that had already happened. And it's making Gusteau feel like a has-been sellout. And he's just like hating life. So he's in the restaurant the whole time. Anton Ego was also there, but less involved. And it's Gusteau who has the flashback to his childhood after tasting the ratatouille and reigniting his love of food and wanting to be a better cook again or something, not Ego. And the theme of the movie is more about Remy living the double life from his rat family who are living underneath the Paris. And he has way more characters. He has multiple sister characters, more brothers, a mom and an uncle. So there's just like, there's a lot going on.
They all get 10 solid minutes each.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck remembering all their names.
I mean, if we know anything about rat families and how they breed, that's a little bit more realistic.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Like, I mean,
I have 4,000 siblings.
I mean, they kind of allude to that in the movie already, but it's just like none of them are really characters.
Well, they probably saw they're like, well, but this really can't, if he has a mom and a dad, this can't really be a Pixar movie. We have to get rid of one of them.
Yeah.
More of these characters have to be dead for, you know, trauma reasons.
Yeah.
To enjoy it. So after the 2005 holiday break, Brad Bird gets brutal.
Brad goes brutal.
Brad. Brutal Brad. He tried to make Gusteau work, but with Skinner and Ego, there were too many stories to interweave. Mm. So he decides, killing Gusteau, putting him out. And then he's
Pixar,
like,
true Pixar
in true Pixar form. And he's got family. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
makes him single parent somewhere. But they're like, we put all this work in creating this model for Gusteau. And they're like, he's like, okay, so we should keep him, make him a figment of Remy's imagination, therefore giving Remy someone to actually talk to.
Right.
Because there's a huge chunks of that where he's just silent, right?
Yeah.
So he can actually talk through his thoughts with
Patton
somebody.
Oswalt's like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, I actually have something to do.
Yeah.
Then he starts culling the rat family down to the two.
Exterminating.
Damn, why'd you have to use the word culling? It sounds so brutal.
Brutal Brad.
Brutal Brad.
Then story supervisor Mark Andrews suggests separating Remy from his family at the very beginning.
Hmm.
So the story can focus on Remy enjoying his like dream and then have the family come back at the worst possible time.
Right.
And so it's not just constantly happening.
You know what? Speaking of big asks that they didn't do, I did notice rewatching this that Linguini never calls him Remy. He's always just a little chef. Mm. So Remy didn't talk to him and say like, oh, by the way, my name's Remy.
It's like Babe.
Yeah. That'll do, Pig.
He never learns that the pig's name is Babe.
Does that make it better for you, Ryan? Is that...
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm going to go watch it again and enjoy it a little better.
Pinkava had one minor female character, Colette. Bird thinks it's interesting that there's only one woman in the kitchen, so he does some research and he finds that it's extremely rare for women to work in French kitchens. And so he's like, that's a great character motivation.
Right.
He wants to tap into that, and he expands her role, as she explains in the movie, like how much harder it is for her to be in that position than the men.
So right? Did Jan know that detail, or was he just sexist?
I'm sure he was just like, and a female character.
It was just like for diversity and inclusion purposes. He's like, well, we got to have one theme. Yeah. We got to have a love interest in here. That's probably what it was.
Yeah, probably.
Was that Linguini needed a love interest. And so he's just like, well, whatever.
From what I read, she only had like six lines or something like that.
I love Colette. She's a great character.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah.
And I love that part where she gets mad at him. For like, she's like, you're gonna fuck up my chances.
Yeah.
She's like, you just weaseled your way in here and I've like worked my ass off and you're gonna fuck up my chances of being in this kitchen.
Yeah.
And I love that she pulls out the pepper spray when he falls into the kiss with her. That is a great detail.
That is so good.
Oh yeah, because she's like holding it.
She pulls out the pepper spray and then doesn't use it.
She's like, all right, I'll see where this goes. That's pretty much how all women are. It's just like we're like one decision away from like either kissing you or pepper spraying you straight in the eyes
at work too.
Yeah. Exactly.
It kind of jumps into that like very funny idea that like Linguini quite literally falls upwards in the kitchen.
The patriarchy.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Bird says he only kept two scenes from the original story as is. So it's just a bunch of, like I told you, a bunch of ideas, but how they actually play out, how they actually work, he completely reconceived them.
Gotcha. Story beats are still there, but like how they were supposed to look and like be fleshed out,
yeah,
that all changed except for
dialogue.
Except for two.
Two. Yeah. So what does Jan Pinkava think of all these changes? So Pinkava says the movie changed in tone and lost his European sensibility. This is Pinkava.
Boo-hoo. just kidding. The emotional core of the original story was not to Bird's taste. The character of Remy changed profoundly. He became more self-assured and straightforward, confidently following his talent and passion for cooking and working to overcome the obstacles to his dream. Left behind were the complexities of the character, Remy's own struggle with his identity as a rat, his betrayal of his family's values, his awareness of the craziness of his desire to be part of an enemy world, his yearning for acceptance and frustration with living a lie in the kitchen, all culminating in his final coming out.
It's like, that's a really deep Pixar movie.
That is deep. Yeah. I didn't get any of that.
That's a lot of themes for a rat.
I know.
I mean, after watching this movie, all I really want to do is try Ratatouille. I've never tried it before.
He's But this is like, he wanted it to be like the sexy French depression.
Yeah.
He's struggling with my ennui and, you know, who I am is a rat and a chef.
Yeah, Pink Eye, why does Remy pick up smoking?
His fucking family keeping me from my dream. Imagine the merchandise.
With authentic smoke.
Yeah.
Those that they bring back the candy cigarettes from the 90s or 80s or whatever.
Also, at the end of 2005, Michael Eisner leaves Disney and Bob Iger is brought on. One of the first things Iger does is at the start of 2006, he buys Pixar for $7.4 billion.
Woo!
To give you an idea, Marvel and Star Wars were both purchased for $4 billion each. So clearly...
Wow. Pixar was worth more than Marvel and Star Wars?
Yeah, exactly.
Damn.
So...
If you think about Marvel at the time... That Disney bought Pixar, Marvel wasn't doing so hot.
They had Iron Man came out. That's about it.
Yeah.
So this purchase alleviates a lot of the pressure of making the movie.
Whew.
But they're still committed to their June 2007 release because movies have to be like that. Okay. So Bird casts Patton Oswalt after hearing his comedy bit about Black Angus Steakhouse.
It wasn't after his live reading of The Day of the Clown Cried.
No. So he was listening to the audio from this, and then he goes, "My God, this sounds like perfect." So he takes the audio from his bit about talking about Black Angus, and it's a whole bit about how it's like, "Fuck you, you're going to eat all this butter. We're going to cook it, and you're going to eat all this goddamn bread." And like,
"Because then we'll bring out our 55-ounce Los Mesa He-Man steak slab, served with a deep-fried pumpkin stuffed with buttered scallops and 53 of our potato bacon balls."
And I don't know why, because he's doing a voice most of the time, but he was like, "This is Remy." And so he animated Remy to that audio as a
cool
test.
Oh,
and there was like, yep,
that's awesome.
He, that's how he got him.
They gave it a chef's kiss.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there you go.
So Linguini was voiced by Lou Romano, an artist and animator for Pixar, who did the voice for the story reels, which are basically just animated storyboards. And Bird felt it was perfect. Like, no changes. Like, this guy's great. Like,
damn.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I know, right? Just to be like the main character of a movie.
Well, it's funny. It's funny because to this day, whenever like I'm with my kids and we're excited about something, I do what Linguini does. Let's do this thing!
Oh, we do that all the time too.
Yeah.
I love
it when they do that. This is the thing I've always loved about Pixar over DreamWorks and Disney. Is that they still, so DreamWorks and Disney still have that attitude where they're like, "We got to get names." And it's just like, no, you don't. Because,
yeah, nobody
like,
gives a shit. Will Smith on the fucking thing. No kids going, yeah.
Like, you should pick someone whose voice fits the character because that's the thing that the kids are seeing, that people are seeing. That's what matters. It's not a celebrity with like a recognizable household name and like the face and all the stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so Pixar is always really good about like, "Oh, we just had this random animator who worked for us who had a great voice," or like, "Oh, we just got this kind of lesser known actor or like this character actor to come in and do this voice," and it works out so much better.
Yeah, I mean,
you're listening?
Incredibles. It's like, "Ooh, I went to go see the new Craig T. Nelson and Holly Hunter movie."
Yeah. Like, some little kid's like, "The guy from Coach?"
Yeah.
Some 5-year-old.
Like, no kid gives a shit.
Oh, man.
And Patton Oswalt wasn't even really that famous then. So it's just...
I think that's the first thing I've ever, like, have known him from.
Mm.
So, do you know who voiced Remy's brother?
Oh,
Emile.
It's Peter Sohn, isn't
it's
it?
It's Peter Sohn.
Yeah.
Our good friend.
Director of The Good Dinosaur and most recently, Elemental.
I really liked Elemental.
I liked it too.
So, technical challenges of making the movie included making realistic fire and clothing. So one of the big things that Pinkava really pioneered was when he did Jerry's Game, the point was, remember Catmull said you had to put a human character in this.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, because we're eventually going to make movies with human characters. So we need to get started on that work. So he built that foundation.
Because they did Toy Story.
You have Andy. who's but then if you see Andy's mom in that movie, it's like generous. Fucking terrible. Like,
even calling it okay is generous. I'm now like remembering how absolutely fucking like early 2000s computer animation, Uncanny Valley horror show that was.
Like the bully kid in Toy Story?
Jesus.
Oh my God.
Well, I like how they're like so concerned with the humans, but then you think like, man, did you guys remember Scud the dog?
That's also kind of ugly too. Yeah,
work on dogs, maybe.
so they're talking about like, so when he was doing that, like he was kind of laying the groundwork so they could go further with human characters and Klopp. So if you watch Jerry's Game, you see a lot of his. He has a suit jacket, like the way it lays on him and moves. And so that was very fundamental going forward. Even look at Incredibles, like they're all wearing skin tight suits most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to even fucking worry about any of the cloth simulation. Mm-hmm. So now you have a bunch of chefs and robes and aprons.
Now that you say that, I'm thinking to like all the moments where like, when he's doing like he's being puppeted and his like chef thing is like loose and kind of flapping. Then he like gets his sleeve in the suit. Like he's just.
Think about when like, he gets in the water.
Oh, yeah. When he knocks Remy into the water.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Get him. Yeah.
And another big problem was tons of rat fur. Is it you said something about like we don't need the, like so
good?
And the problem with the rat fur was that they needed to make sure that because rats are naturally blended into their environments, and it's like, how the fuck do you make a rat that looks like a rat but it's not blending into an environment?
Stand out.
So like they really struggled trying to figure out how to make that lighting work, and then obviously making the food look good enough to eat to make Ryan cry.
Their focus groups
convincing
like
gratitude.
This young man named Ryan, we need to make sure that he cries at the end of this movie. How do we do it?
Bring in his mom. Question: does he love his mom? Yeah.
Is he a fat kid?
Is he a peasant?
Yeah. Okay. So they do like a bunch of research for this. How they do, like, they went to actually Paris and they took a tour and they went to the sewer system. They visited an exterminator shop.
Wow, exotic.
Yeah, I know, right?
They went to the sewer system.
We're
going to
do this.
We're
gonna do this
Pixar's covering the tab.
We're going to do this we're going to do this film about high-end French cuisine. Where are we going to go first?
The sewer!
I hope they didn't go to the restaurant after they went to the sewer.
No, it's they like brought their meals. Yeah. They had meals in the sewer.
They ate ratatouille in the sewer.
It's a peasant food. Then they had a lot of the storyboarding and animation teams had cooking lessons because they were just like, the only way to animate someone cooking well is to actually know what the fuck you're doing, right? And then they also had live rats.
Couldn't they just watch like a bunch of episodes of Top Chef or something?
Didn't exist yet.
This was the 30s. No, Pixar's always been cool about that. Like for Finding Nemo, they got all the story artists scuba certified so they could like watch fish and stuff. Like the animators and stuff. It's really cool.
To get like front and center and just be like, oh, this is, I mean, even from looking at a fish to knowing perspective underwater, how far you can see in the environment, stuff like that. Yeah, and so they kept live rats also in the offices so they can just
run down the hall.
It running loose.
Fun fact, one of them was an incredible animator and actually was puppeteering, you know, Brad Bird at one point.
Yeah.
Guys, I got a great idea.
This rat just wants to be an animator. It's his dream.
There's just one animator just losing his mind. He just has this rat on his desk all the time. He wants to draw. I know it.
Health department tried to shut down the studio. It's like, we don't make food.
Yeah.
This picture, he's got his little, like, his little Wacom tablet. Yeah. Like, just drawing.
Little tiny little stylus.
Yeah.
He's getting there, guys. He's getting
there. You guys, he's really good. The scale is just off. We have to blow up these drawings times 1,000.
Okay, so the single biggest artistic and technical challenge were the rats themselves. So initially, the idea of a movie filled with rats was a hard sell because, I mean,
ew.
Exactly. Because they're widely considered a gross pest, right? And a lot of these interviews that I was reading were talking about how much they were just like, this was a big struggle for us because people were so grossed out by rats. And I'm sitting there kind of going, was there really not that much rats in pop culture before this?
I think people did like mice usually because they're less offensive.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Like because they reference Willard, oddly enough, and then like Temple of Doom, not Temple of Doom, Last Crusade. Hmm. And so like they're just saying like how big of a problem it was to kind of get them over it.
Was Basil of Baker Street, were they mice?
He was Radigan, the villain was a rat.
Oh, yeah, he wanted to be, yeah.
So, see, you know, rats has been villainized in pop culture forever.
Pinky and the Brain.
They were lab mice?
They were mice.
Yeah, okay.
They're laboratory mice. Their genes have been spliced. Pinky and the brain. Come on, you guys.
So off.
Maybe, like, I don't know. Every article was just talking about how awful it was. And I was sitting there going, like, maybe they were too close to looking like real rats. So
Secret of Nim.
Mm.
The Frisbee family, mice, but they run into the rats of Nim who have escaped from the National Institute of Mental Health. And they think they're the bad guys, but they're really the good guys. So.
Okay.
There you go.
So there's a lot of 2D examples.
I'm a really big fan of rats.
Yeah.
So.
There's the TMNT villain, the Rat King. He's
really... Splinter.
Splinter.
Oh, Splinter's a hero.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, so we've got Rats of Nim, Splinter.
See, these are all Radigan. Are all 2D.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what it was. I don't know. But so they found that people, especially like within Pixar, were getting really repulsed by the rats. They were just like, ooh.
Did they make them like hyper realistic at first or something?
I don't know.
Like, that's so weird.
So
dirty, like, mangy, foaming at the mouth. Yeah. And that's not just because they ate delicious
like eating
food.
Each other.
They definitely have rat bubonic plague.
So, yeah, their rats are all tangled together. Yeah. This big conglomerate of gross rats rolling around the halls of Pixar.
I don't know. I guess
this is my European sensibility.
It's all one tangled web of rats.
Remy is not one rat. He is multiple rats.
Plural of ratatouille is just a ratatouille.
I guess I don't know, as a fan of rats, I couldn't imagine like looking at a cartoon of a rat and being like, oh, disgusting.
Yeah.
Like, what? Like,
I don't know. So maybe it's the scurrying. I don't know. So to counter this.
The scurrying.
I don't know. Whatever it is. So Pinkava is sitting there going, when he was on the project, he was like, okay, people are freaking out about this. And he's like, okay, so he shortens their tails. So they're not just so wiry and gross, I guess, or creepy looking. And then he also makes them walk upright, like a human.
Hmm.
And so you can see a lot of like concept art of what they look like, where they're just kind of like walking around.
Yeah, because then it just looks like they're wearing like parachute pants, like MC Hammer.
I did like Remy's explanation for that, though.
Okay, being a food fan. Yeah. So the rats were specifically rigged for that aspect in mind.
Actually, Ryan, do you want to give us like a quick, as our animation expert, what is rigging?
So a model is a static 3D model, like it doesn't move, and they put skeletons inside the mesh, they call it, deforms to the skeleton. So sometimes, I don't know how it is now, but when I was working in animation, you would sometimes have a separate model for the character sitting down as opposed to like a character walking, because making a model sit down, there might be weird, awkward deformations on their legs. Mm-hmm. And so if they're not going to stand up, just have a separate model that doesn't have their rig breaking.
Yeah.
But I'm sure Pixar makes one rig that can do everything.
Yeah. The difference between rigging Linguini versus Gusteau, mm-hmm. right? It's a different skeleton. It just has to work differently because
they move differently.
Yeah.
They need more bones.
Yeah, exactly. Or Skinner.
Mm-hmm.
So they rigged all these rats to be upright. And Bird is like, they need to be rats. And so he's like, make them walk like rats. And it completely breaks their rigs.
Hmm.
And so all the models just go fucking crazy with it. And
again, another terrifying thing.
Pixar to deal with. Leave it. Great. So he's like, okay, we need to start over on the design on the rats because they need to act like rats. Which in turn makes Remy stand out because he wants to be more than a rat, right? And that very, like, one of my favorite moments in that movie, because I remember sitting in the theater next to somebody and they laughed their asses off the joke of, why are you walking like that?
I don't want to taste where my hands have been.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's like, I don't want to be constantly washing my hands and stuff like that. Yeah. So it makes him stand out from all the other rats.
Mm-hmm. I love the bit at the end when all the rats come in to help cook. Uh-huh. And they stick him into that industrial like steam cleaner, like, it packs. And I'm like, I don't. They come out all fresh and clean. My first thought was like, I don't know if it's gonna get it all.
Maybe run them through there again.
Yeah, like let's go do a couple of cycles. But they'll come out all fresh and clean, like, oh,
and all puffy.
Yeah, all puffy. All right, you're on soups. Are you? Should you be? No, let's do it up a couple times. Yeah.
Maybe it was just the psychology of like the idea of a rat being near your food that was making people gross.
Whatever
out.
It is.
Because unless those rats looked like Greasy Dick Weasel from Food Fight, like I have a hard time believing they were that gross or terrifying. God. Food Fight.
No, I mean, you can't forget, you know, that rats were the carriers of what, the Black Plague?
Yeah. So Bird wants them to be on all fours walking around like actual rats. And they're like, this is going to take a lot of fucking work to re-rig all these. This is going to be considerable cost and time to do it for all these different rats.
Huh.
He was like, this is the hill I'll die on.
He's like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
He's like, don't make me show you why they call me Brutal Brad.
Yeah. So, and they're like, listen, we already have these rigged. Like, why not just get? And he's like, no, this is how it has to be. So now they have the rats to be more like rats. But then they're like, okay, so we also need to make them look as cute as possible as when we can. And that one of their like things were like, we discovered like making them having T-Rex hands and then putting the T-Rex hands together like they're touching, like it just instantly makes them cute.
Yeah.
And they exaggerated, like sometimes mice do dog-like things and they exaggerate that in the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like with their ears back and looking kind of like.
Yeah, sheepish. Yeah.
Looking less.
One of my favorite like animated moments in that whole movie is when he walks past the mouse trap. Like he
skirts around it
and he's like, oh God, like it's just really good. So some closing thoughts from a couple of people about this very difficult process of animating this entire film for basically like after they settled everything, it was about 12 months to get everything done. This is Brad Bird on this whole process.
I would probably prefer not to work that way because it's really scary and hard. But I think the film actually benefited from the fact that I had to just make decisions and stick with them. All the time for rumination had been used up.
It's kind of like what we, the Fugitive video I talk about. It's just like, fucking get it done.
Yeah.
We don't have time to think about this shit.
Yeah, you had to be decisive.
Mm-hmm. Mm. This is Patton Oswalt about the Pixar...
Je ne sais quoi.
Oh, French.
All these other animation groups want to be like Pixar, but they steal the wrong things from them. They don't steal the actual process, which is to take your time, hold out for the good stuff, which is kind of what Ratatouille is all about. Don't just stuff yourself with bland garbage. Wait for the good stuff.
Nice. Yeah. So, I mean, they're constantly just making sure that this stuff works. And they're revisiting and mixing and making sure that it becomes the best version of itself versus just going, okay, fuck it, put it out. DreamWorks. This is Mark Andrews, the story supervisor.
When you're working on a movie that's basically about an artist shining, you can't help but caught up in that and want to shine too. Especially when it's an impossible thing to do. Getting this film done in the amount of time we had is impossible. It's no way to make a movie if we had a choice, but everybody rose to the occasion and did their best work.
Okay, wrapping up some random stuff here. Alternate titles. Even though, like you said, it was Ratatouille from the beginning, but they were kind of like, okay, how do you market that to kids? Right. And if you remember the trailers for it, it says Ratatouille, and then it flips, and then it shows you the pronunciation of it.
Yeah,
oh, right.
And I then do it flips that. Back.
Cooking with Rats? With a
terrible.
Z?
No.
With
what?
A Z?
Oh, get out of here.
What is this? That's like a DreamWorks movie.
Yeah, that is a DreamWorks ass.
With ants?
Yes.
Ants with a Z.
You can see Remy on the poster with his DreamWorks eyebrow.
Yeah.
Cooking
with rats?
No.
I hope the person who came up with that idea got fired.
Just
they work
get
at
out.
DreamWorks now.
Bob Peterson, get the fuck out.
Get the fuck out of here.
Fine, I'll go get a job at DreamWorks. They hire anybody.
Petite Chef. Petite Chef Remy. The Little Chef That Could.
Dumb.
And The Cutest Little Chef in France.
Okay, those are all terrible. All Ratatouille terrible. Is the only title for this movie.
Yeah. Sometimes you come up with other titles to tell the board about so that they can feel like they made the right choice. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's
100%. Give them a bunch of bullshit and then have the one you love be the best one.
Yeah. Here's the, exactly. The other options are so bad. They're like, actually, let's just stick with that original one you guys had.
Dude, well, you are so right, board members.
great decision making.
Way to earn those bonuses.
Just every one of those has a Z in it for no reason. Yeah. All right. Yeah, you're right. Ratatouille does work.
But then you little chef from Paris.
But then you run the risk of like one dumbass on that board being like, you know what? Actually, I heard Z's in titles are real big right now.
Yeah.
Let's make it two Z's.
Paris.
It is the 2000s. Okay. Promotional item. So they did come up with one random promotional item. Disney planned to sell 500 limited edition Ratatouille Chardonnay.
At Costco.
And I think only in California.
Listen, I want a bottle of that. If someone has this in their wine cellar, so please let us know. I want that bottle.
These plans were abandoned because California winemakers were really worried about it because they thought that perhaps it would be encouraging underage drinking because it is a kids' film and it's like, here's wine for kids. And then if they come for that, they come for the rest of the winemakers, right?
Because unlike big tobacco, big wine's not after your children.
Yeah.
Here's our new line of wine for kids with a Z.
Ziggurats and wines.
Oh, my God. I hope they changed it to like white grape juice for kids that they just like called Chardonnay. They're like, it's Remy Chardonnay, but it's like a little juice box. White grape juice box.
500 of these bottles somewhere in the United States have real booze in it.
I got the golden ticket.
At the very end of the credits, there is a little graphic that states, our quality assurance guaranteed, 100% genuine animation. No motion capture or any other performance shortcuts were used in the production of this film.
Ooh. Why did they have to say that?
So Bird was very annoyed with certain animation companies starting to lean into motion capture.
DreamWorks.
Food Fight.
Oh my God.
Remember that? Remember we were talked about like how the guy wanted
to. I like to forget about it.
Was it Boston or Chicago? The band, one of those bands on their album said no synthesizers were used on this record because, you know, they were getting popular. I forget who it was.
Exactly. It's just this weird little thing. It's like fucking guys taking shortcuts, you know? Like, so. I think that is very funny because it, like compared to what we talk about on Food Fight was that he was trying to make a very Looney Tune-esque thing through motion capture, which is not
which
a
makes
thing.
Can
you imagine
sense.
Someone trying to do linguine with motion capture? It just doesn't work.
He's breaking his bones.
You could probably, if you had a really kind of like Mr. Bean, Rowan Atkinson style, like
not even remotely. Like the part where he ducks under the first time he pulls his hair and he ducks underneath dish.
The pots.
Like, yeah.
Kind of stuff. He's way too Gumby. But I mean, like, if you were going for a more natural looking performance, but with still that kind of like physical humor.
I don't even know if like Doug Jones could do that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about motion capture, you actually can layer on animation on top of the mocap. To like exaggerate it, so it would be possible to do something like that. It might not in the end be worth it financially because just animating it goofy the first time,
yeah, exactly.
Like, it's like adding a layer in Photoshop, you can actually do an animation layer on top of the motion capture animation.
When did that come out though?
I was aware of it like in 2004.
So there was something.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, I would assume that theoretically you could, because like the motion capture would go in like with keyframes that you could also then tweak. So it's you could always, you could use it as like a baseline.
Bird was purist.
Fucking synthesizers.
And no mocap.
Yeah, at the end, it's like no motion capture. or fucking synthesizers. Okay, Ratatouille released June 29th, 2007 on a budget of $150 million. It grossed $206 million U.S., $623 million worldwide.
And they probably deemed it a failure.
At the time, they were kind of like, it wasn't every preceding Pixar movie was in the top five highest grossing movies of that year. And Ratatouille was not. So Rotten Tomatoes, 96% with critics, 87% with audiences. The film was nominated for 5 Academy Awards, including Best Original Screenplay, which was Brad Bird, Jan Pincava, and Jim Capobianco. So Pincava was up for an award for it. So,
nice.
It won Best Animated Feature Film. Pincava went over to, is it Laika?
Laika, yeah.
Laika.
Named after the dog.
They do like Coraline and Paranorman. So Pincava went over to Laika to direct a film that was never completed. He has since jumped around the industry making interactive shorts and some mobile stuff, but has never returned to like that kind of proper quote-unquote filmmaking. So it's not made anything since.
So he, besides the shorts, the two, like at least two feature films that he worked on, he never got to finish.
Nope.
Oh man.
Womp womp.
Brad Bird went on to direct live action films Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
Oh whoa, I didn't know that.
Excellent.
That's cool.
Then he did Tomorrowland, which was a huge bomb for Disney. So after he did those two, then he returned to animation with Incredibles 2, which was 14 years after the first Incredibles.
Woo.
All right. Ratatouille, was it worth it?
I mean, has your mind changed, Ryan? Is it now like a bump above?
Do I like it now because I've been convinced to?
Do you like it now?
Yes.
Okay.
It might be my favorite Pixar movie of all time.
That it was worth it.
You better say you like it now, Ryan.
Ratatouille for me is the, and I'll explain as I continue to talk.
Oh, please don't.
Please do.
Ratatouille to me is the Cafe Rio of Pixar, where I don't think about it until I watch it again. And I'm like, oh yeah, I really like it. Because I never think about going to eat at Cafe Rio. But then like once I was like, hey, let's go to Cafe Rio. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a thing. And then I go and I eat it. And I'm like, Cafe Rio is not bad. It's pretty good. Like their pork salad is pretty good. And then I just forget about it again until someone mentions it. And I'm like, oh, I should go Ratatouille. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. I really like this movie.
That metaphor is going to make sense to nobody outside of you.
Cafe
probably.
Rio is a Tex-Mex, I guess. I don't
fast
know.
Casual.
It's fast casual. Quote, Mexican food.
Eatery. We'll call it an eatery.
Yeah.
The rest of the world has Chipotle, right? Because it's like our Chipotle.
Yeah. Or a Costa Vida, if they know what that is. Same people who did Cafe.
Point is it's a restaurant that's usually run by 17-year-olds.
Rats, yeah.
But yes, rats.
And there's probably some rats.
Rats of human society.
Yeah, Ratatouille reminds me a lot of Cafe Rio because of, you know, all the rats.
All the rats. Cafe Rio, please don't sue us. No, like, I think it was worth it. I really like Ratatouille. The ride is really fun. Like it's to bring. I mean, talk about intellectual property.
They should make that a movie.
The ride is really fun. They have like the restaurant in one of the parks, and they did this really cool thing where they had an animatronic Remy like coming out on a what are those cloche? What are those things called?
Cloche.
But the cool thing is like it was a little animatronic that was remote controlled by the person wheeling it out.
Aww.
And the handle was in like the handle of the remote was in the handle of the cloche. And so the person would just like have it conded down to the side and like Remy would interact with the people and they don't do that anymore. Disney.
Aww.
Come on.
Disney.
Yeah, so I mean, it brought about some really fun, cool things like for the kids and the family. So go ride the Ratatouille ride at Walt Disney World at Epcot.
Do you have stock in Disneyland?
I really, really should. Disney, give me money.
I will say Ratatouille is worth it for sure because I love that movie. I'm probably one of like the weird people who like this is one of my favorite Pixar movies.
Yeah, I
like
this
movie a lot.
This is your favorite, isn't it?
Yeah. But like again, I love rats. I'm a big rat fan, as we've established. and I just thought it was cute and funny and weird. Yeah, rats with a Z. And it does ask a lot of the audience. There's a lot of suspension of disbelief that you have to do. But like I'm like, yeah, I'm along for this ride.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was like fun and like pretty unique. I mean, most Pixar movies are pretty unique, but yeah. I mean, it sounds like even though there was a lot of hardships getting it made, that it was kind of their We're going independent, and like it actually worked. And I really admire their dedication to like actually finishing movies and not just like, ugh, this isn't really quite working, so let's just like scrap it, you know. I'm just like, no,
we can
make this work, you know.
Ryan.
Yeah. I think it was worth it. Even though it's not one that I ever put on, I know it's not a bad movie.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoyed it watching it this morning, even though I have like criticisms about it. Uh-huh. And it's probably not one I'm going to put on unless someone else puts it on or tells me to for a podcast. I love the message at the end, the whole anyone can cook thing that the ego comes to. And then, yeah, like the emotional moment when he eats the ratatouille, like that's the only Pixar movie where I'm like, oh, jeez.
Wow.
I don't know.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's even over like the opening of Up or.
Oh, I guess that's gut-wrenchingly sad. So, yeah, I guess that did get me. I forgot about that.
I blocked it out.
Yeah. I will never watch that movie again because of that opening.
Yeah, I get it.
It's way too fucking sad. Yeah.
But, yeah, I would say Ratatouille's worth it. You know, they've missed, unless they've already done it, and I just don't know, they got to make a Ratatouille with a two for the sequel.
Oh, yeah.
Hell, yeah.
I think this movie's awesome. I think that is what you were saying, Glenn. It's like it makes so many leaps of logic that it just goes, ah, fuck it.
Yeah.
Why not? Whatever. Why not? You can control them. Why the fuck not? Because that doesn't happen for like so long into the movie. Like, you're just like, why the fuck not? Who cares? But you know, one of the things that I really like appreciated about the movie watching it this last time was Skinner, the bad guy. Like, he was such a fun villain.
Yeah.
The way he's, like, losing his fucking mind.
Yeah.
Thinking
the rats are gaslighting
him.
Oh,
look, it's over here. Oh, it's over here. Like, he's just, like, it doesn't sound like Ian Holm at all.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, he's just a really cool foil of just watching someone just lose their mind. But, yeah, I think there's some stuff in it that is just kind of, like the love story just kind of comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's just it's kind of silly.
The moment he accidentally says he loves her, it's like, based on what, bro?
Yeah, where did this build?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you watch it now, you kind of, if you know going in that it was basically made in 18 months, you kind of go, okay, I see where they cut corners.
Yeah.
Like, they just kind of, and move on. But for me, it still works.
Yeah.
Like, it's still fucking funny.
Despite everything. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Ryan.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me again. This was a blast.
Where people find you?
just about everywhere. Ryan K. Hudson is my username, except
not
for
the Z.
Not with a Z. Ryan Hudson. And then on Facebook, it's still Channel 8. I was going to say, though, since the last time I was on the show, you, Ian and Ray, did a voice for the bridge of a song that I released.
Oh,
called Marry Me and Leave Me. So I need
my God.
I'll make sure. I think I need to say that. Did I ever send that to you guys? I don't think I ever did.
I think you did. Yeah.
Okay,
I think
cool.
You did. Yeah,
yeah. So if your listeners want to hear you guys,
just tell them that you
remember.
We'll
post it.
Yeah. Fuck yeah, man.
I'll link.
I get recognized all the time.
So thanks for doing that.
You're welcome.
Let's do some follow-ups.
Whoops, no. Now that we got Ryan, fuck out of here.
Yeah, now that guy's gone. We have a few people who commented on our episode, our Black Christmas episode on Spotify. So I'm just going to read through those really quick. Sam said, loved it. This has quickly become my top podcast. Definitely my best discovery of 2023.
Wow.
Aww,
I love stuff like that.
Kelly M says, proud to say I am one of the 430 and that I listened to almost 4,000 minutes of shit show this year.
Ooh.
Damn, Kelly.
I haven't
dedication.
Even done that. And I re-listened to every episode.
There was someone that on YouTube that commented that was like, well, damn, I got to start listening to these on Spotify so I can be part of that Wrapped.
Listen to it on both. Why not? And Melissa said, you guys have become one of my favorite podcasts. Please keep them coming. And the last bit of follow-up we have here is the Happy Camper, who posted this on Reddit 5 months ago.
Look, I found this
the
other day.
We are really bad at monitoring all of the various social media channels that we have.
Was this on our subreddit?
On our Reddit.
Yeah,
on our Reddit. And okay, so to be clear, when this episode hits, it'll be February or March.
Something.
So not only is it 5 months from now, when I found that Reddit post, by the time you hear this Happy Camper, And we love your comment. We're about to go into it. But it will be like at 6 months.
I mean, I responded to it. It's
you did?
Our friend Reminder, didn't he say that he was going to help us out with
son of a
our
bitch.
Reddit?
I'm gonna text him after this.
He was posting all the videos there. The last one he did, I think, was the first arrested video.
Ooh, I'm gonna get on his case so hard.
Fucking Reminder.
Okay, but we are on Reddit r/itwasashitshow. We're gonna hopefully be on there more. But anyway, so the Happy Camper wrote just an appreciation post. Just a post to say I love the show, randomly came across you guys when looking up something about the first Sonic movie on YouTube and immediately started binging all the podcasts and YouTube specials. You guys helped keep me sane through the first year of taking care of my newborn son, and I jump on every new episode that comes out. Really appreciate the effort you put into researching each topic covered and enjoy the input and humor everyone injects into every episode. Making stuff is hard makes me smile every time I hear it, as I know I'm in for a good time. Keep up the great work, and cheers from Australia.
Aw, thanks, Happy Camper.
Thanks so much, Happy Camper. We are so glad we were there for you. You know, during the birth of your son, who's probably like in college by now. I don't know, based on how fast kids grow up. But thanks so much for that nice comment.
Yeah, that was quite lovely when I found that.
And then we had a review. Jelly and Toasty left us a review on Apple Podcasts. And they said, my absolute favorite podcast. Please, 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 can you guys put these puppies out more frequently?
We're talking about the podcast, yes. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
We can pump out some puppies. Yeah. We're a puppy mill now. Yeah. So.
A podcast mill? That is inhumane. I will not be a part of a podcast mill. This is ethical podcasting only.
Organically sourced.
Cage-free podcasting.
Yeah. Artisanally crafted.
Well, Jelly and Toasty. Sorry, like, yeah.
We're working on it. We got you. We try.
We try to make these regular.
It is nice, though, to know that people like it so much that they're like, make more of these, because it's better than like, maybe you could make less of these.
Yeah.
Maybe don't put some of the episodes out.
Can you imagine telling them, like, I love this show. Just stop doing it so often.
Make less.
Pump the brakes a little.
I do have two here that I forgot about. One of them was, this was pretty funny. This was on Black Christmas. One day I need a video called Coked Out Trailer Bros. And it's just Ray and Clint as their Trailer Bros personas watching bizarre trailers and explain the process.
I love it. That could be a Ray. If you want to do
Brody,
if we want to get into like video, you and I could do Patreon videos of us being coked out trailer bros watching movie trailers.
Maybe we'll see.
I mean, guys, you got to get method with that shit and actually get coke.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. And the last one was this is from Moose-tastic Bombastic.
What a name!
Just saying that like. They don't have money to support us on Patreon, which is totally fine. We do not expect that at all. But so that they're commenting and liking on YouTube, and seriously, that does help.
Yeah,
so,
reviews.
So if that's all you're doing, that's all we ask. That's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you.
And goodbye.
Get out.
And get the fuck out.
Clint, right, here comes the stick.
All right, we'll see you later, everybody. I'm out of here.
Thank you so much for listening. It Was a Shit Show is researched and produced by me, Ian Jench. Sound editing and mix by Ray Reynolds. Our theme music is by Ryan K. Hudson. Wardrobe provided by Clint's Closet. If you're enjoying the show, you can support us on Patreon or help spread the word by leaving a review and forcing your friends and family to listen. And if you have a shit show suggestion, find us on social media at It Was a Shit Show, but shit without the I. You can also find all these episodes on our YouTube channel.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.